Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Hi, I'm Janet Napolitano, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. Homeland Security begins with hometown security. That's why I'm pleased that Walmart is helping to make our communities more safe and secure. If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately. Report suspicious activity to your local police or sheriff. If you need help, ask a Walmart manager for assistance. Thank you for doing your part to help keep our hometowns safe.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose.
Hello, Homeland Security? Yes, I have something suspicious to report. There's a can of peaches that's upside down. Okay, we'll send in a SWAT team.
Used to laugh and call him names.
I have never in my life, ever, I could never believe a nation could go so upside down so fast. But this is what you get when you have an unknown college teacher of the Marxist persuasion foisted upon us by George Soros and the Managed Funds Association, in my opinion. And you have Janet Napolitano, who let her state wide open, left it wide open, wide open. The barn door was torn off the hinges when she was the governor of her state. And now she's tearing the hinges off our Homeland Security. I never heard of anything as crazy as this. But then again, it's Monday. And here is Homeland Security that can't find Osama bin Laden after 8 years. They can't find Julian Assange of WikiLeaks, even though the man is threatening basically to give up every state secret ever known to mankind. Did you hear what he did now? The man has given up a list of facilities around the world that the U.S. describes as vital to its national security. And this is no joke. Mines that are cobalt mine in Congo, an anti-snake venom factory in Australia, where it is, an insulin plant in Denmark, key satellite communication sites, places where transatlantic cables make landfall. The man is a terrorist. He's a cyber terrorist. He's a traitor. As far as I'm concerned, he should be tried, given his sentence, and people should be able to send money into poor. How's that? Now, what's interesting to me is that this rat, traitor, bum is hiding in the United Kingdom, and he hasn't been banned from the UK yet. Says now that he's making arrangements to meet the police of the United Kingdom, but they can't find him. You hear this? The geniuses in Scotland Yard, they can't find the number one cyber terrorist in the world, Julian Assange. They can't find him, but he's going to turn himself in. You hear this? That's the country that that Winston Churchill was once the leader of. Look what it's fallen down to. It's astounding what the West is becoming. But then Spengler wrote about it. What do you care about Spengler? You think I'm talking about something else? So what do you think of all of this? I'm not interested. Truthfully, I don't care what anyone thinks. It's what I think that matters. Plane lands in Pittsburgh after dog bites passenger flight attendant. This is a story close to my heart, because it's a 12-pound Manchester Terrier named Mandy. My dog's 11 pounds, although the way I've been feeding him in the rain lately, he could be 12. Apparently, Mandy became agitated when her sedatives wore off. The Pittsburgh Tribune Review reported. A man next to her owner, an unidentified 89-year-old woman, tried to soothe the dog, but it bit him and broke free of its cage. The dog ran up and down the aisle and then bit the flight attendant. So the pilot then decides to land in Pittsburgh to make sure everyone was okay. So here's a plane full of sissies. A 12-pound dog gets loose on a plane, and the pilot has a diarrhea attack, and he has to land the plane. The captain felt it in the interest of safety. It was better to land and have them looked at than continue on. Hello, Walmart. I just saw a dog running down the aisle. I think he's a threat to national security. Bring in the SWAT team. What do you feel about the country you're living in? Have you ever felt less secure because we have more lunatics running higher things than ever? How could you have a Homeland Security Department go to Walmart and employ Walmart staff in the war against terror when you don't even tell people what to look for? What, the peaches were put upside down? You're going to get calls to Homeland Security now, like you get morons calling 911 who went in there for a certain bargain, like a toy or a game, and it's not available. They're going to call Homeland Security and say it's suspicious. They think terrorists stole the game. Well, where can they get the game better? How in the world can we have a country anymore with Janet Napolitano running the Homeland Security Department? Don't you people see how stupid this is? She is the most incompetent Homeland Security Secretary since this dumb agency was created. I've never, okay, in my book, Trickle Up, I said she should be forced to resign, but you didn't believe me. You thought it was hyperbole. You thought it was hyperbole. Assange making arrangements to meet police, lawyer says. Flap less, coast more. 1-800-449-8255. Chicago Mike, you're up. What's on your mind, Chicago Mike?
Yeah, Mike, you're right about Janet Napolitano. You know, like I said, when she starts getting Walmart on there, I'm a first-time listener by it, a first-time caller. It is ridiculous. It makes me wonder which way the country is going. You know,
yeah.
I've never seen anything like it before. And I shop at Walmart where I live in Lockport, Illinois, near Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. I mean, I haven't gotten the book Trickle Up Poverty yet. You know, I wanted to get it and everything else. But you're right. I mean, what you're saying there, you're dead right on. You know,
I hope I'm live right on, Mike. Well, how in the world could the staff of Walmart help in the war on terror? Can you when listen to what? Wait, here's the important thing. She gives a speech about Homeland Security. Timothy McVeigh, look out for anybody with blonde hair and blue eyes who just came back from Iraq. Is that who's on the terror watch list? If you see somebody with a cross walking down the aisle who believes in God and carrying a flag, call Janet Napolitano.
The putz, that's all there is to it.
What the hell is she talking about, this lunatic? She belongs in a damn asylum.
She needs to retire. She needs
to... This is the 6th of December, the year 2010, and I'm still on the radio trying to save a ship that's going down. I'll be right back.
Savage. Hi, I'm Janet Napolitano, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security.
God.
Homeland Security begins with hometown security. That's why I'm pleased that Walmart is helping to make our communities more safe and secure. If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately.
Like a jar of curled mayonnaise?
Report suspicious activity to your local police or sheriff. If you need help, ask a Walmart manager for assistance. Thank you for doing your part to help keep our hometowns safe.
God.
Mambo, Mambo Italiano, hey, hey, Mambo, Mambo Italiano, go, go, go.
It's too early for Halloween. Why did she just come out in a mask, like a black mask, and say it's all been a joke, that she's really not a Homeland Security Secretary, it's all been an act? Okay, let's see what the kinds of calls they're going to get. Let's see. 10,000 conspiracists call and say that, hello, Homeland Security, we have a president whose birth certificate is unknown. Hello, Homeland Security. We have a president who has sealed his college records. Hello, Homeland Security. I'd like to report a suspicious person in the White House. He hung around with known terrorists, and he sat in a church that espoused anti-American ideals for the 20 years. Hello, Homeland Security. We have a Department of Homeland Security run by a woman who left the border with Mexico open while gangs were running across the border. Hello, Homeland Security. I'd like to report a suspicious person at the head of DHS who refuses to stop the flood of illegals coming across the border. Shall I go on? This is crazy. The whole thing's a nut, just nuts. It's just beyond comprehension. I mean, if they launched such a thing and they gave people tips of what to look for, but when it's so generic, you're going to get lunatics calling about curdled mayonnaise. If you see something, say something. It reminds me eerily of the Soviet Union under Joseph Stalin. What do you mean something? What the heck does that mean? You mean your neighbor is suspicious because you don't like his yarmulke? Or your neighbor's suspicious because you don't like his cross? Or your neighbor's suspicious because he's burning a fire? I mean, what the hell is going on in this country? Do you see what happens when you have an incompetent, scared, rabid government? How they'll turn citizen against citizen? This is just what Hitler did, by the way. Don't tell me I'm not making a proper analogy. I am. Every dictatorship thrives on turning a citizen against citizen. I saw a show last night about Saddam Hussein's remarkable brutality. The things he did, I don't even want to go into. The gassing of the Kurds. I watched it again with horror. I didn't know it was as bad as it was. The way people were brought in, if they even criticized the president, beaten by police with sticks. But most interesting to me was how he initiated neighbor reporting neighbor, one person ratting out the other person, families turning on each other. This is very similar to what Napolitano has just done. Why do I say that?
If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately.
Okay, well, I see a white man driving a black car. That's suspicious. I see a black man driving a white car. That's suspicious. I see a couple in an old Volkswagen bus with no glass in the bus, and it has flowers painted on the side, and I'm scared. Can someone come help me? What is this? What do you mean suspicious? Spell it out! Tucson, Arizona. Mark, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. Glad to talk to you. I was just thinking as I'm listening to you that maybe they've got something credible. Maybe Napolitano and Obama are just a little bit afraid to tell the people. Maybe this is their way of sliding in on us to be real
careful. What, somebody slipped curled mayonnaise into Walmarts around the country?
Well, you know, Walmart is the bastion of capitalism. I could see how certain people probably want to do something to a place like that. And you could hurt a lot of people at this time of year.
But what is it that's suspicious? Please spell it out for me.
Well, I'm not saying that something is suspicious. I'm just saying that...
No, I mean, if she says, if you see something, report something, whatever they came up with, some idiot thing that some junior high school publicist came up with, what is this suspicious thing she's talking about? What could you see in Walmart that would be suspicious that an ordinarily not insane person wouldn't already report? Let's start with that.
No, she's not doing anything beyond what I could think of. And
that's what I'm saying. Look, one of the principal points of my book, Trickle Up Poverty, is fire Janet Napolitano. Was I wrong?
Absolutely not. I live in her.
All right, so therefore, all right, let's move it on. Thanks. I notice I haven't given out any free books today. I'm in a Scroogey mood. This shows you what paranoia is, what I'm about to read to you. Egypt says a Sinai shark attack could be an Israeli plot. They say that Mossad, the Jews, put sharks in the sea to harm Egypt's tourism. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. You tell me there's a rational mind in the entire nation of Egypt? A possible connection between Israel and the shark attack that left a 70-year-old German woman dead in Egypt, Sharm el-Sheikh, on Sunday, is not unfounded, according to South Sinai Governor Mohammed Abdel Fadil Shusha, quoted by the Children of Hitler Reuters on Monday. Some in Egypt have suggested that the shark attack could have been part of a secret plan by Mossad to harm Egyptian tourism. So in other words, Mossad threw the deadly shark in the sea. That's what Reuters is now reporting. The children of Hitler. The grandchildren of Hitler's death camp. Come on. This is unbelievable to me. So now the Jews are throwing sharks in the sea. And they can act when they have homing devices, only bite people in Egypt? It could be that the tuna fish, were overfished by the Egyptians, and that the sharks are hungry, so they're biting tourists from Germany because their flesh tastes good, or they look like tuna fish from eating all of that schnitzel? Is it possible that a 70-year-old woman who's emaciated from Germany, who ate a bad diet all her life, resembles a tuna fish or whatever to a shark? She might look like a tuna fish. New York City, WOR, Tony, what can I make of all of this, but what am I making of all of this? What do you think about it all?
Michael, I just want to comment on Janet Napolitano. I think she feels that public opinion's coming against her, and she senses that Obama's going to throw her under the bus, And when she does, she figures, well, I've been doing Walmart commercials. Maybe they'll elect me to the Board of Trustees of Walmart.
I don't know the answer to this. I just think this is one of the stupidest wastes of money, number one. And number two, it turns people against people. That's what bothers me. Doesn't it provoke suspicion for the average person without defining what you mean by something suspicious? If you see something, say something. What does she mean by that?
It's totally asinine because she doesn't define it.
All right, listen, if you're walking down the aisle there in the Walmart, me and the girls came up with a couple ideas, all right? Listen up here. You're walking down the aisle in your Walmart, you see, and you see something suspicious. Now, we're not talking about the ordinary stuff like a jar of mayonnaise turned upside down or a maraschino cherry open up. We're talking about something really off the wall. You know what I mean? Now, we're not going to define it any further because of reasons of security. But we'll leave it to you to figure out what we mean by, if you see something, say something. You know what I mean? Me and the girls figured this one out over the last couple of weeks in a retreat in Grenada. We took a retreat in Grenada, a couple of hundred of us, and we came up with this, okay? New York, Tom, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, God bless you, Michael. Merry Christmas. Michael, how about the wussy language that's developed? I know President Bush wasn't a conservative, but at least he said, Osama bin Laden, we're going to smoke you out of your cave. We're going to hunt you down.
Yeah, but that was then. Now he came back and said he's sorry for anything he did that was actually tough.
Secretary Clinton.
Now he's sorry for everything he actually did in order to sell books and to appeal to Katie Korver. In order to appeal to Wallbanger and the fisherman in the morning, the golfer and the fisherman, he's now saying he's sorry for everything he ever did that was right, and everything he did that was wrong, he's proud of. I have no faith anymore in anything but my dog, and he's 11 pounds, not 12. And he would not run wild on an airplane, I can guarantee.
I'm comfortable with the decisions I made. I took a lot of time to make the decisions. There are some things I'd like to do over. I mean, obviously.
What would you do over?
Well, I wouldn't be standing in front of a mission accomplished sign on an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
Probably would have been a little less blunt in some of my language.
Right, right. Okay.
But dead or alive, perhaps.
Yeah. Dead or alive, okay.
Yeah. I'm back in the saddle again. Out where a friend.
So all that Bush did that was good, he's sorry for, and everything he did that was mealy-mouthed, he's happy about, because that pleases Jay Leno and the other members of the liberal government media complex. That's all. Play that Gene Autry. I like him. I grew up on this. Come on, louder. Come on.
Where you sleep out every night and the only law is right. Back in the saddle.
This song actually was the theme song for Brokeback Mountain, but it was not permitted to be played in theaters because it was misinterpreted for what it was. All right, we're having a good time in our own little way. You know, we have to deal with kind of nincompoops at all levels of government. I don't know how to say this, but I never heard of a campaign like this. If you see something, say something. Now it's in Walmarts. It's sort of a bad version of a bad movie version of 1984, where Big Sister is watching you. Big Sis is a miss, is what I said 15 years ago. It was ripped off by everyone, thank God. Because as Lao Tzu said, it doesn't matter if you get credit for what you say, as long as what you say is being heard. It's lucky when I said trickle-up poverty, no one stole it and turned it into a book before I did. How many other things have I said that should have been stolen by now? Go search now. See what you can rob now because you have no imagination. I want to say thank you to all of you for... There's a California Highway Patrol officer named Todd Overzet. He was seriously injured a while ago in the pursuit of a bad guy. And he has received hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cards and gifts from my listeners in California and around the nation. And he's thanking you through me during his recovery. Todd's close to a recovery. I'm going to speak to him soon. And all I can say is that the listeners of this show made one man feel stronger and better. Okay? He knows that he's not alone. And you know how strongly I feel about the men who have the guts to protect us. You know how I feel about that. You know what a world it is out there. What wolves are circling the streets. And we need the wolfhounds to kill the wolves. Don't you understand how this works? So you vermin on the left, you sick degenerates, you, who hate this country. You sick degenerates, you. You take a look at what this WikiLeaks bastard has just released and threatens to release. And you sit there turning him into some kind of folk hero. You sick things, you. You don't even know that you're suicidal. You have a guy, a sicko, who was trying to commit suicide by email, named Julian Assange. And he gets a hold of an email from Hillary Clinton from 09, where the State Department puts a list of things, of installations whose loss could critically affect U.S. national security. And it shows the pipelines, the transport hubs, cable locations, satellite sites, gas pipelines, cobalt mines in Congo, an anti-snake venom factory in Australia, an insulin plant in Denmark, key satellite communication links, the places where transatlantic cables make landfall. And you're supporting this man? You think he's a folk hero? The man is a cyber terrorist. Some locations are so remarkably critical. The Najim gas pipeline junction in western Siberia, for example, that he has released, is described as the most critical gas facility in the world. In some cases, specific pharmaceutical plants or those making blood products are highlighted for their crucial importance to the global blood supply chain. And you think that this is funny? You see, most of you are mentally ill because of the drugs you've used all your life. But that cocktail of drugs that you have used all your life, you liberals, combined with your genetic diaper-doper baby upbringing, has now reached a critical mass, and the schmuck government we have can't even find them. The schmuck Homeland Security Department can't even find them. Britain. I'm on the banned list. I can't enter Britain, but he's hiding in Britain. And the schmucks in England can't find them. You hear this? 8 years Osama bin Laden's on the run hiding in a cave. They can't find him. Now this putz, the cyber putz, is hiding in England. They can't find him. But you, don't pay a library fine. See if the SWAT team doesn't find you. Or if your wife veers out of a lane somewhere, see if she's not arrested. What a country we're living in. Now they're telling you to turn in anyone who's suspicious in a Walmart. Like if a mayonnaise jar is upside down. It's time for Napolitano to be forced out of office. She must be fired. This campaign must be retired. She must be fired. Are they kidding me? If you see something, say something? What does that mean? What positive benefit has WikiLeaks achieved in releasing the documents? The answer is nothing. The whole intent is to, A, embarrass any aspect of national security. The overall aim of the WikiLeaks is to undermine the entire West, to destroy the West, to kill the West, to end democracy as you know it. He is a terrorist by any definition. And I want to know why my damn government doesn't catch this bastard and arrest him, try him, and hang him publicly. How's that? Oh, you're too tough. Freedom of speech. All of you cockamamie Prozac-taking First Amendment lawyers in Manhattan. You don't like it. It's free speech all of a sudden. You rats who defended the Nazis in Skokie all of a sudden. Free speech. But you wouldn't come to my aid unless I put up $400,000 on the barrelhead. You liars, you. You're all liars. I've dealt with you. I know who you are. You swill Prozac down your gullet because you know you're a liar. First Amendment, my behind. First Amendment, but for $400,000, you might be able to smear someone in England, huh? That's your First Amendment. There is no such thing as a First Amendment to these lawyers, these First Amendment lawyers. They're in it for the money. But anyway, I've gone into another sphere. I think I'm going to go somewhere else with the show today. What am I so angry about? Why am I the last angry man? Why am I angry? Why am I angry? If you're not angry, you're a nutcase. If you're not angry, there's something wrong with you. That's all I can tell you. If you don't get up every day and see what this Marxist professor and his ilk are doing to this nation and our national security, and you don't see this for what it is, and you don't feel anger, then you're really lost. Your emotions are numbed, and you should be angry. You should be very angry indeed. Now, many of you are. you went and you threw out 60, 70 Democrats, and maybe there'll be some change. I'm not sure. When you see the gobbler there doing deals on the Republican side, Mitch the gobbler. Well, they cut, at least the taxes aren't going to go up for me. That's good. That's all I care. Is that all I should care about? The end of the day, the rich aren't going to have to pay more. Why should I pay more than you? Why should I have worked over a half a century, actually more than a half a century? I've worked over 6 decades. I don't think I've missed a day of work in 6 decades, not working on something. I took used comic books and put a mark to them and resold them when I was 5 years old. Now, because I'm making a little money, I should pay more taxes than you because you're lazy or you're unlucky? Why should I? Why should there be a graduated income tax? The more you make, the more you pay? That's illegal as far as I'm concerned. That's crazy. What do you mean? If I'm successful, I should be punished? And you should be rewarded for being unlucky or lazy? What kind of sense does this make? I'm totally in favor of a flat tax. You should pay some taxes. Half the country pays no taxes. You hear this? But they vote. I have another plan to trickle up poverty. If you don't pay taxes, you don't vote. I don't care the reason. I really don't care the reason. No taxi, no votey. No taxi, no votey. You want to have some skin in the game is a current phrase they use. Every few years, another phrase comes up. Now it's skin in the game. Remember that phrase that was around for a while, gravitas? Remember that came up and lasted around 6 months during the Bush period? Well, he has gravitas. He doesn't have gravitas. He has gravitas. He has gravitas. He has gravelox. I would like gravelox because I have no gravitox. Can I have a gravelox with cream cheese, please? Because I have no gravitas. That was around for a while. Now it's no skin in the game. That's the latest. Every few years, there's another cultural phrase that is mimicked and parroted by people. I try to avoid those phrases because I look out. I'm on the lookout for them. Do you ever notice like a bad talk show host uses phrases that others use repeatedly? It's an interesting definition of how you can define a good talk show host from a poor one, which is how often do they use phrases like that or phrases that you've heard somewhere over and over again. I think they're called trite phrases. I learned that when I published my first book, when the editor went through it with a meat axe, and she said trite word. Today, of course, if an English composition teacher wrote trite, the English composition teacher would be reported to the Department of Homeland Security because she'd be considered some kind of ist. I don't know what kind of ist, maybe a linguist. I'll be right back.
Savage.
If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately.
Every president has known the truth about the Arab world, but they have not been able to act for the truth. The whole question of money involved in politics, we are owned by propagandists against the Arabs. There's no question about that. Congress, the White House, Hollywood, Wall Street are owned by the Zionists, no question, in my opinion. They put the money where their mouth is, it counts.
All right, so according to Helen Thomas, the Zionists are now the suspicious enemy. So by that definition, if you see a Zionist in Walmart, call Janet Napolitano. In other words, if Helen Thomas was walking around a Walmart and she saw a Zionist, she could call Homeland Security and say that they're suspicious. Or you could call on your particular ethnic group that makes you feel uneasy. This is the world we're living in now. We're moving into the progressive Stalinism that I feared all my life, all in the name of security. Progressive Stalinism, step by step, stage by stage, in order to make us feel better. First, they x-ray our orifices, and now they want to have us report on a neighbor without defining what they mean by suspicious. You know, we live in a world that's increasingly soulless. There used to be, we talked about soul in my day. I haven't heard the word soul in 30 years. Used to be a big thing. He has soul, she has soul, he's a soulful musician. I'm a soulful guy. That's why a lot of people love me. They don't even know what they like about me. One of the things is you can actually hear the man's soul come through the microphone, very much like a jazz singer or a musician who has the capacity to project their feelings through the electrons, you know, that reach you through your ear. So we're reaching a point now of almost a dead soulless nation. I don't know how this gets turned around. Look at this story I just picked up during the break. It shows you, what I'm about to read you shows you, that the battle for the sanctity of human life goes on even after you're dead. I'll read you the story. Judge rules woman's body held since September can be cremated. A Jewish American woman, we don't know whether she was a Zionist or not, dead and on ice in September, should be cremated, a Manhattan judge ruled today, rejecting a family member who claimed the woman embraced Orthodox traditions in late life. Before Ethel Barr, age 105, died on 9/11, she paid a Manhattan funeral home to cremate her remains before they're scattered in Israel. But Barr's great-nephew, James Pollock, insisted that she changed her mind and wanted to be buried in compliance with Orthodox Jewish customs. So the judge, Jane Solomon, sided with Barr's estate and read out loud from the woman's will, which said, "I desire that my body be cremated." When his lawyer, Pollock's lawyer, who wanted her buried, objected to the judge's ruling, and judge sniped, "He can be here when the ashes are dispersed." It just shows you what goes on in the world now. Why are they fighting over a thing like this? The woman said she wanted to be cremated. She lived to 105. She wrote the will in 1999. What's his business that she should be buried somewhere? I'm not here arguing one way or the other whether you should be buried or cremated. The fact of the matter is there's a 24-hour commitment time in the Orthodox community that you're supposed to be buried within 24 hours. It's the way it was done in biblical times. And ever since then, religious people are buried within 24 hours. You don't know about that. They don't create wakes and have vodka parties, vodka cocktails over their legs. What a world I've grown up. What else is in the news? Scientists dress up as giant pandas. Oof. Why Jets will beat Patriots tonight. What is a Jet? I know what a Patriot is. I don't know what a Jet is. What when Jets beat Patriots tonight, I can't get behind sports. I tried all my life. Can't do it. My head's not there. When I see who's running the country, how can I be interested in a Jet or a Patriot? To me, it's the Marxists versus the Americans. That's the number one sporting match of my life. Right now, it's Americans 1, Marxists 0. But that's, of course, after 3 losses last year. We had 3 big losses, health care, the nationalization of General Motors. Are they doing well? No, the Chinese bought a stake in GM. Guangzhou Motors. Guangzhou. They still make a good car, GM. I'm now going to get callers. Yeah, it's great. They look nice. I like the look of the Chevy. I don't own one. I'm glad you do. If I was in the market for a regular car, I'd buy a Chevy. Some kind of hot rod Chevrolet, I'd buy the hot one with a big engine. Or the Dodge with a big engine. They don't think they make it anymore. They make the Viper. But I put the V10 in a regular Dodge. You know, you want a muscle car, I'd like to do that. But I may get one to add to my stable of cars that I don't use. Or I'm just not going to get another car ever again. What do I need a car for? I don't go anywhere. You don't need anything. At a certain point, do you really need anything? What do you really need in life? Well, I don't know what you need. You need your health, number one. Oh, you heard all this from your grandfather. I never listened to a word they ever said to me. I didn't listen to my father. I didn't listen to my mother. I listened to nobody. I'm very stubborn. I'll be honest with you. I was in a restaurant the other night. Now that I think about it, I meant to tell you this story. Since it's a talk show and only talking to a couple hundred thousand people a minute, I figured I'd share my most intimate stories with you, you know, second by second. I was in a restaurant Friday night. Actually, I was in Alioto's. Okay, you know I love the joint. I was there. It was a little too crowded. Thank God they're doing good while everyone else is dying. But that's because of me, because the food's so good. And I'm eating down the window, looking at the fishing boats. You know, I'm not a tourist, but I do enjoy the bridge and the boats and the this, the that. The food's great. Richie's good. I see a table next to me, some guy who, he's reading a palm of a young lady. There's two guys and a girl, or two girls, and he's reading their palm already after the drinks and the tiramisu already, and he's talking loud, and I have to listen to it. I don't like listening to table chatter, to be honest with you. I'd rather be watching a movie. I've told you that. All right. So I couldn't help but tuning in. He's doing the palm job. And she's saying, "Really? How'd you know this? How'd you know that?" He didn't. So I figured, all right, it's my cue already. Let's finish up on the fish and drop the tip and take a walk. Because it's getting already too loud. When you mix the sugar with the 3 glasses of wine, you know what you're getting, escalation in the vocality. So I put the coat on off the chair. I'm starting to leave, but I couldn't resist. So I lean over to the guy nicely, and I say to him, do you read palms? I said, I see you're reading a palm. I said it nicely, though, not in a hostile manner. He said, yes. I said, are you American Indian? He said, no, I'm Armenian. I said, well, you have better food anyway. That I learned in the first grade in the Bronx, how to immediately do a comeback to avoid getting into a fight. He laughed. And then I said, take a look at my hand. Come on, give me a quick reading. But it was a little dark. I said, I've had this hand read all over the world. Indians, I've had it read by this one, that one. So he immediately looked at my hand, and he looked up at me, and he said, I'll tell you one thing. I said, what's that? He said, no one can tell you what to do. I said, why, you're any different? I didn't know the guy, but we had a big laugh. In other words, it could have been taken the wrong. See, anything can be taken the wrong way if you don't have a sense of humor. I'm trying to teach you how to deal with people. I'm personally being your father or your uncle who you never had. If you're going to engage with a stranger, you've got to have the ability to do it in a polite, in a friendly manner that's not obsequious, or else you'd be look like a guy with the loafer job that you're looking for to take him out on a date. I wasn't looking for a date. I was interested in what he was doing with the palm, but I didn't want him to run all over me. So when he said, no one can tell you what to do. So I looked at him right away and I said, why, someone can tell you what to do? My mother taught me this when I was young, because you had to learn to be quick on your feet in New York, or you got run over by a steamroller. They'd strip you bare and throw you on the subway tracks, and then take your lunch and laugh at you as the train ran you over. Yeah, goodwill to man. That's what I love about Christmas. Once a year, at least, we say it.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately.
Congress, the White House, Hollywood, Wall Street are owned by the Zionists. No question, in my opinion.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
There's your Christmas present, all you liberals. You woke up and found out your heroine is a Jew hater. That would be Helen Thomas, who you thought was just cute. And Janet Napolitano is an incompetent director of Homeland Security. Now she wants you to report on your neighbor if they're suspicious. I have no idea what she means by suspicious. It's turning neighbor against neighbor, husband against wife, etc. And it's very dangerous. It's time for Napolitano, after this misstep, to be forced out. She's failed us at every turn. Now, out of desperation, she's turning one American against another. If she said, here's what we mean by suspicious, and she identified who you should be looking for, then you'd be onto something. But this kind of generic turn in your neighbor thing is something that's very un-American, to be very honest. As far as I'm concerned, she's more dangerous than WikiLeaks right now. Now, here's a shocker just came out. Obama's now cutting taxes more than the Republicans. He's cutting the payroll tax. Well, I don't know what that is, really. I don't... Reduction in payroll tax of 2 points. Oh, now he's becoming a fiscal conservative? And now he's backing a plan on estate taxes, which I don't like at all. There should be no estate taxes because it's after-tax money. One of the most criminal of all taxes are estate taxes. You know that. The estate tax was eliminated up until this year. But now Obama wants to return it to 35%. 35%. Tell me something. If I've worked all my life and I've paid taxes on all my money and I leave an estate in excess of a certain amount of money, why should it be taxed again if I want to give it to somebody? Why should it be taxed again? What, they worked for my money? They want double taxation without representation? No, I think there should be no estate tax. That, to me, is a separation of the difference between a Republican and a Democrat. On many issues, perhaps, I don't really see a difference, nor do I care. But on the fiscal conservative side, I don't see any reason in the world why you should vote for a Democrat. Why should you be taxed twice? Let's say you put aside money all your life after taxes now. Where does it say a government has the right to steal another 50% of your money, or 35 or even 5% of it? Where does it say they have a right to steal it again? For what? What, are they spending it so wisely? On programs like this in Walmart? So now Obama's cutting the payroll tax, more so than the GOP. Okay, good, good, good. Who knows? We could wake up one day and find out he's a patriot, born in Hawaii. You never can tell. He could enlist in the military. You don't know. He could decide to go overseas to help out in the... Poland wants missile shield to protect Russia. But I think the big thing is the big sis thing. We got a government that can't find Osama bin Laden after 8 years. The most advanced snooping technology the world has ever seen. They can peer through the earth down 200 feet and tell you if a heart is still beating inside a cadaver from China from the year minus 5,000. But they can't find Osama bin Laden. If you, on the other hand, access a porno site, big sis knows about it, and can report you to the local librarian who would be interested in what the porno site may be. Does anyone go to a library anymore with the internet? Well, what's in a library that you need? Well, okay, my book, if you don't have the money to buy one. There's a certain function of libraries. I mean, where else can a predator meet a young child but in a library? Think of the five reasons that we still need libraries. It's like the postal trucks. It's kind of sad. My uncle was a postman, God rest his soul. You know, he got a job, he schlepped for a while, pulled a bag, had a heart attack, lived for 30 years after that on the government dole. All right, I'm not knocking it. He did get a heart attack. Didn't do a thing for 30 years after that. But God rest his soul, not a bad guy. Didn't mean he was a vet, fought in Japan. He was entitled to never work again. But that's not the point. So he worked for the post office. But the thing I'm saying is this. 5 o'clock, 5:30, the post truck comes to my house. 5:30 delivers the mail. 5:30 at night. I don't blame the guy in the truck. And it stinks. It's like the most carbon-emitting vehicle left on the road. It's worse than a diesel engine in a boat. Government trucks probably put out more carbon than any other factor in America. Worse than a coal-firing plant in Shanghai. And there they come up the street, and they sound bad. They look bad. They look how they deliver mail. And what's the mail? Most of the mail is a waste of time. What's the point of it? How could you be in favor of a post office that loses billions of dollars a quarter, pollutes the atmosphere, and delivers mail that nobody reads? Everything of importance in my life comes either by email or by Federal Express. I basically don't look at anything else as either invitations or solicitations or catalogs that I absolutely don't want to see. I've never bought anything that comes by mail, regular mail recently. Nothing. Billions of dollars spent on these glossy brochures. I know it keeps children, hired to make them. It's very impressive. But it's like heartbreaking, all these catalogs. There's stuff in there that I have no idea why I need it. Hamacha Shlechama. You ever see some of these companies? Hamacha Shlechama. Companies I don't even know exist. Make things, buy, and stuff nobody wants. Like a flying wine bottle that's been flattened. That's good for storing the eggs of fleas, in case you're an egg flea collector. What do you use these things? A flattened wine bottle that you can put on your mantle? Absurd things that the capitalist world does produce. I mean, I'm not a communist, but at a certain point, who needs all of this dreck in these catalogs? Fleece pajamas. You can't go to a department store or go online and buy a pajama? What do you need a catalog for? I just bought myself a present. It was raining. I went and bought myself gifts for the holiday. It's one thing. What do I have to buy you a gift for if I don't know any? I don't know what people want. So I buy myself a gift this time of year. I get caught up in the frenzy like normal people. But instead of going the extra step because I can't do it and buying people I know things, I bought myself a Burberry scarf, a certain kind of old man hat that I'm not sure about them. There's a certain type of hat men wear when they're over a certain age. I don't like it. I don't like the look of it. I went back instead to my I have a leather hat that was given to me in 1988. It was made, it's like a Montana cowboy hat of leather. You know, that kind of hat. You know, like a hippie hat that you used to see in the 70s. You know that kind of hat, I mean, that old, like, hippies used to wear, made of leather, and they had beads. They always, like, smoking and joined. They had, like, John Lennon glasses. Well, I don't have any of the other items, but I have the hat because it was given to me in 1988 by my son when he came back from Jackson Hole, Wyoming. It's kind of, you know, falling apart. That hat attracts a lot of attention. It's a better chick magnet than dogs, I got to tell you. For some reason, I don't. Girls are attracted to the most stupid things. They're like, they're like naive. I'm not looking for girls. They come up to me. What a nice hat, man. That's cool. I'm not looking for anybody. Why does a hat attract somebody? And yet you could put another hat. You could look like an old schmuck on a boardwalk. You ever notice that? What hats can do to a man at a certain point in their life. A certain hat can make you look like an old putz. Another hat you put on, suddenly you're debonair. You're there. Hey, cool dude, who are you? You must be somebody special. No, it's an old hat, that's all. It's an old hat I found in the closet. No, you must be an artist or something. No, I'm not an artist. I'm just, it's an old cowboy hat, that's all. So I don't buy things from Schlemmer catalogs. So how do you feel? I'm not going to ask you how you feel about Napolitano. I can't do this anymore. I just can't do this anymore. It's getting worse by the day. I want to read you something. Wait a minute. Let me get it here. Hold on. Where is it? Because just you think I'm making it up. I want you to know I'm not making it up. First of all, what you're listening to is not a telephone call coming in on your filling. You are not hallucinating. This is the Savage Nation. It's the third largest radio show in America. It has many millions of listeners per week. I am Michael Savage, and the show is listened to by most intelligent people on Earth. My latest book is Trickle Up Poverty after 25 other books. It's a huge smash bestseller, even though you haven't seen it on Jay Leno or on Katie Couric's show. But in the book, I have a list of things to do to save America, which have been roundly ignored by most people in the midstream media. I say midstream affectionately because that's what you do when you go to your proctologist. He tells you to make certain that the midstream. And I have a 37-point program. And the here it is, here, number 10, Fire Janet Napolitano, page 304. Now listen to why I said it. Don't know the woman, I'm sure she's loved by all. Pressure Janet Napolitano to be removed from office. She has demonstrated her incompetence in Homeland Security. She's failing to uphold the illegal immigration laws already on the books. And she has suspended the construction of a fence along the border with Mexico, despite the fact that federal law mandates it. I make it very straightforward. Now she wants us to call in suspicious people or suspicious activities. All right, so let's do that. Let's put our heads together. Let's figure it out. Let's see now. You're in Walmart, and you see illegal aliens who can't speak English buying Christmas ornaments. Is that a suspicious act? Should you call Homeland Security? Let's go down the list. Any other things you think we should call in about? I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm going to tell you right now that when I saw this story on CNBC, I almost fell out of the chair, and I've seen virtually everything by now. We just had released today, the Federal Reserve was forced to release details of who they lent the $3.3 trillion to during the crisis that was created by George Bush, George Soros, and the others who melted us down in order to give us Obama. You're not going to believe who got the money. Well, we know that American banks got the money, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo. One could argue that there is a rationale for bailing out American banks, although I wouldn't argue that necessarily, in that the people weren't bailed out. It was the bankers who were bailed out. Take a look at the bonuses they've given themselves since the bailout. But let's put that aside. The blockbuster is that foreign banks also took your money and ran. Barclays Bank, Royal Bank of Scotland, and Deutsche Bank were among the big borrowers. But what's even more disturbing is that Barclays Bank borrowed a cumulative $232 billion from the funds. And what did they do with it? They bought an American company. They bought all the U.S. operations of Lehman Brothers. And Lehman Brothers was forced into bankruptcy by the other gangsters of Wall Street. And a foreign bank borrows money from our government and picks up the pieces from Lehman Brothers. It's beyond comprehension. Bank of Scotland of the UK, Societe Generale of France, Dresdner Bank, Bayerische Landesbank of Germany, Dexia of Belgium, were all among the top 10 users of American money under George Bush. How do you feel about that? Do you think it was appropriate for George Bush and Christopher Cox and then Treasury Secretary Paulson to lend money to foreign banks during the fake crisis that was created in order to give us a panic attack and make us vote for an unknown man from Chicago who has now proven himself to be the most incompetent, dangerous president in American history? I want to read you something. First of all, I want to repeat what I just said to you on the Savage Nation. As the euro crisis is spreading to Spain and Portugal and Italy, and the euro itself is collapsing, hitting a 10-week low, the United States is now going to bail out the euro. But we just learned that the United States under George Bush bailed out these foreign banks. So there's virtually no difference in fiscal policy between what George Bush started and what Obama is continuing. It's the same exact governmental policy, but you don't understand this. It's a shell game. But I, Michael Savage, have pointed out that the Democrats or Republicrats are an oligarchy. I've said this since 1994 on the radio, and well before 1994, before I was on the radio. Now, let's boil it down to what you, the person in the street, should take away from this. You think that the money doesn't really hurt anybody. You think that the money that disappeared under Bush and Christopher Cox disappeared. You don't understand that the value of America's assets were driven down by more than $10 trillion in 2008 under George Bush. You don't understand there was an agenda lurking behind the shadowy dealings, all pointed out in Trickle-Up Poverty. But I ask you this, where did those dollars go? I'll read this to you from page 80 of Trickle-Up Poverty. They ended up in the hands of a relatively small number of people and companies whose purpose was far more nefarious than merely making profits. The raiders who trashed our markets sought nothing less than to use the control they had gained over our financial system to put a wet behind the ears leftist president in office. Moreover, they leveraged that power to create a government run on socialist principles, but controlled by a small group of wealthy investors who dictate policy to the puppet president they elected. In effect, they pushed us further along the path to a socialist oligarchy, reference number one in Trickle Up Poverty, Nightmare on Wall Street. Another player in the financial meltdown is leftist financier George Soros, who some believe has been trying for decades to manipulate American politics to the advantage of the Marxists with whom he is in league. It seems to me that Soros tried to rig the 2004 election in favor of John Kerry. How? By pouring tens of millions of dollars into Kerry's campaign coffers and into building an anti-capitalist, anti-democratic organization such as MoveOn.org. In spite of that massive investment, was Soros successful? No. Did he give up? Far from it. During the next few years, you'll have to read the rest yourself on pages 80, 81. What is the take-home message of what I read to you? Here is the take-home message. You're an average person. You're worried about your family. You're worried about your bills. If you're like me, you have your savings in T-bills because there's no interest anywhere, so you're basically putting it under the mattress, and you assume that guy Ben Bernanke is going to protect you. You assume that the Treasury Secretary, that idiot Geithner, who goes to a stupid comedian from Brooklyn for advice on how to run the economy, you think that that schmuck is going to protect your money? You think that spitting idiot in the Treasury Department knows what the hell he's doing? He doesn't know anything. He may as well be an Oprah fish. He may as well be an Oprah fish in the Treasury Department. So we learned today, the Federal Reserve is finally forced to reveal who they gave the money to during the crisis that was created by these secret hands. $3.3 trillion is a lot of money. So I gave you the banks that got the money. One could argue, well, it prevented a meltdown of epic proportions.
Savage.
Too many people, he wrote in his dissent, superfluous, it's this lip, it's hard to say.
I think he caught this from Bush. It's sad. I mean, the man was very literate when he came into power, but after almost 2 years on the job, he's starting to mangle words like the president. of Christmas is past. And here's an educated man with a law degree who can't say superfluous while speaking at the Kennedy Center. Play that again. I want to hear if that, how could this happen?
Too many people, he wrote in his dissent, the superfluous, let me start that over. To many people, the superfluous, it's this lip. It's,
well, I'd love to have an audience like that, where no matter what you do, they laugh. That's what you call a staged audience. That's all. All right, what do you want to talk about? I watched Boardwalk Empire last night. It finally is over. I'm going to miss it. I didn't like it in the beginning. It's still a 70, a 75. The writing is not good. None of the scenes are as gripping as any of the others. I mean, because they're missing Matthew Weiner, who really was the brains behind much of the writing in The Sopranos and the ad agency thing. I forget the name of it already on AMC. What's the name of that one? Does anyone remember Matthew Weiner's thing? Mad Men. Very good. You know, the writing's so different. And as you know, the writing is everything, whether it's a movie, a book, or a talk show. It's all about the writer or the writing. Because I began as a writer, I'm a good talk show host because I know words and how to use them. But forget me for the minute. I watched Boardwalk Empire last night. Most of you don't get HBO, so it's a waste of time. But since it's over now, I'll finish it up. The continuity was not good again. The writing was poor. And the scenes were not gripping. I'll give you an example. The last scene when the Irish housekeeper, who the lead guy fell in love with, the corrupt politician who built Atlantic City, played by Steve Buscemi, she's walking past the graveyard on All Hallows Night with the candles, with the Catholic priest, and she stumbles and says, and there's two graves. And then she finds out that they have the same name as her boyfriend. So in the last scene, or near the last scene, she confronts him. Who were they? I want to know who they were. She appears in a sackcloth dress as he's about to go out in a tuxedo again to a gala event because his team of Republicans, who are all shown as corrupt, just won the election. Notice that the bias of the left-wingers who put the series together is so naked, it's embarrassing. I mean, Martin scores easy, is true. I mean, but he really scored easy with this one. Every bad guy's a Republican, every good guy's a Democrat. I mean, Marty, give us a break. We think a man as sophisticated as you could be, he'll do a little better than that. So she confronts him. She's got sackcloth. He's got the tuxedo, the Rolls Royce. Who are those people? And he said, but he tells her a story. The baby died, and it was in her arms for a week. And I picked the baby up and cradled the baby for a week. And then she slashed her wrists 3 days later. And the Irish soda bread woman is crying. I was not moved. Trite, T-R-I-T-E, and superfluous come to mind. Sorry. To bring back words from today. Trite and superfluous. If they had sent me the script, I would have X'd it out and said, trite, do a new scene, close it another way with a murder. There was no nudity this time. I mean, you know, use the formula that works on HBO, which is the more salacious, the better. So it's over. All right, they set it up for the next season, which I'll watch. I will. Look, there's very little good television out there. You have to understand how hard it is to make anything that's good in this world. Any art production that's of any merit is to be loved. I mean, it's so hard to do art in this society where everything is so commercialized. So you have to say, all right, I can support it. So I know someone who went to the opera last night. I think it's Verdi's Aida. I'm not sure. She loved it. Loved it. The time of her life. I think it was in San Francisco. They still have an opery. They bring in some of the good operas out west out here. Why, yes, out here we put on some of the finest operas from the east. Still reminds me of like a hick town. I don't know what it is. I still have this New Yorker attitude about San Francisco. I love it, don't get me wrong. But it still has that small town out west mentality, which is charming in its own way, very provincial. Why, yes, we bring in some of the finest theater companies over the past, and our opera compares to most around the country. Why, today we put on quite a good symphonic auditorium today. It is good, but still seems like it's out of town. And somehow it's not when I went to the Baths of Caracalla when I was a youngster in Rome for some reason, perhaps because I was younger. When I saw an opera in the Baths of Caracalla and then got caught in a hailstorm with a girl I met on the ship going over and had an affair in the park house after being pelted by hail, I mean, maybe that's why I'm not moved too much by the opera in San Francisco. It'll all be in my novel. Don't worry about it. Some of these scenes that you've never heard about before will be written in the two novels that are coming out, one in July, thrillers. two thrillers. I don't know who's going to play me. Play Pagliacci, all right, again, a big deal. It is a big deal. You can do this? You can do this? Go ahead, you try it. See, this aria divides the world into two groups. Those who are moved by it, as I am, and those who are not. And if you're not moved by this, I don't understand how you can consider yourself to even be alive. I don't understand. And you don't have to know Italian. It's like you don't have to be Italian to eat marinara sauce. You know, remember the old joke. But the thing is, I mean, listen to this man's voice, how it cuts across every race, every group. It doesn't matter what your sexual orientation may be or may not be. You know, I read the other day that Michael Douglas, who is allegedly, I hope he does, come back from the cancer. And they say that, you know, I don't want to say anything because I've seen too many people in my family and elsewhere. They have a rose period where they think they, you know, they lick it and the doctors encourage it. And, but anyway, so he's getting ready for a new role and he's going to take, I was very amazed, he's going to take singing lessons in his condition, which I admire, I really do. What DNA that family has, except for the son in jail for the drugs? From sandals to sandals in two generations, horrible. Now, how many times have I told you the English had a saying, from sandals to sandals in three generations, right? The grandfather is poor, his son makes it, his son's son becomes something bigger, and then the grandson becomes a flop, a bum. From sandals to sandals in three generations. But the father, I mean, if you look at Michael Douglas's father, Kirk, gee, this guy was a giant. With a stroke, he did a movie that was better than most people without a stroke. Remember when he appeared in that movie with the three generations? What an incredible guy this guy was. But if you actually read Kirk Douglas's autobiography about his father was a Russian Jewish immigrant with a long Russian name like Nikinsky. They lived in upstate New York. The father was a drunk, beat the kids, yelled at them. So Kirk Douglas ran away as fast as he could to New York to become an actor, and he did. He became a giant. But look what he made of himself, even with a father like that. It just shows you that you don't need parents with a little mobile over your head and sending you to Harvard. In fact, the opposite is true. It's often the opposite is true. The more you push a child, and the better the advantages you give them, there's no guarantee it's going to wind up that they're going to be successful. But every parent wants to give the child the best opportunity. But often the best opportunity is the hardest opportunity. I'm not saying put them in a coal mine, but close to it. Put them in an antiques market in the basement to clean bronzes. And they'll wind up a best-selling author and a talk show host. That's it. You could be stern as a father. You don't have to be a drunk and a beater. You don't have to hit the kid to make him tough. You know, you shouldn't hit him. No, there's no then punchline after that. You shouldn't. You don't have to beat. In fact, certain cultures, if you don't beat your child, it's considered making the child into a weakling. I'm amazed at how this is culturally different around the world. In Africa, they take what they do to boys. No wonder those guys are so tough over there. They beat him if they show a sign, like they're beating him with a whip or a stick. Everyone beats him. They have scars on them. You ever see that one with the tribes? The scars on the kid's back, if he winces, if he lets out so much as a whimper, he's considered a less than a man. He's cast out of the tribe. It's horrible. He has to move to Brussels and become a livery driver. But you take a look at the guys, how tough they wind up from not saying hit your kid with a, you know, whatever, a willow rod. No. I'm not into spare the rod and spoil the child. Never hit your child. Never. Never. I never did, and I never would. But the point is, there are cultures where they hit. I did a whole show on this 2 or 3 years ago. Do you remember? It was around Christmas, and I couldn't take any more Bing Crosby and the nice and the cards. So I said, are there any listeners out there who are beaten by their parents? I had a flood of calls that were shocking. It is one of the great radio shows of my career. across the ethnic lines. I'll never forget, there was an American Indian fellow who called. I don't know the tribal affiliation. And he said, oh, yes, yes, Dr. Savage, grew up in the reservation, and my mother beat me with an electric cord, yes, yes. Then I had a Sicilian guy call. I don't know what she beat him with, a mortadella or something. Jewish guy, the mother threw gefilte fish at him. No, mainly the Jews beat, mentally they beat the kids up. They drive them crazy with screaming and yelling, total madness, chaos, hysteria, but they don't hit. So the kids either become neurotics and are good in psychiatry, or they wind up in the law somehow, doing it to others, what was done unto them. Turn that into something that's not a joke. See if it works. See if it works. I'm not exactly bulletproof, but let me tell you, you can't hurt me with these things because people know who I am right now, and they're not going to let you twist anymore. And the Stalinists, the media matters, they're not long for the world. My guess is that very soon the Republicans are going to look for the tax records of all of the vermin in Media Matters who have made this country into a Stalinist hell. The Media Matters group has made not only my life a living hell for a while, but no longer. They're the ones who, in my opinion, took my words, twisted them, sent them to England or whatever, and had me banned from England. Many other people in the media who are conservative and patriots or traditionalists, whichever, have been picked on by these Stalinist vermin. But no one's ever done what needs to be done. That is, look at their tax records. Where do they get their money from? What are the salaries of the vermin in Media Matters? And do they pay their taxes? And is there any foreign money coming in? Is there any foreign money in Media Matters? These are questions that should be investigated by a congressional oversight panel, and I have reason to tell you they will be very soon. There's an awful lot on the plate. Remember, they lost 70 of their stalwart communist supporters in the last election. 2011 is going to be a very good year for patriots and conservatives, and a very bad year for Stalinist vermin. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Hi, I'm Janet Napolitano, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. Homeland Security begins with hometown security. That's why I'm pleased that Walmart is helping to make our communities more safe and secure.
All right.
If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately. Report suspicious activity to your local police or sheriff. If you need help, ask a Walmart manager for assistance.
Are you here?
Thank you for doing your part to help keep our hometowns safe.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Have you ever heard anything as a vacuous from a government official on this level in your life? Answer no. Have you ever heard anything that's liable to provoke paranoia more so than this in your life? No. Now, the Israelis have taught each other what suspicious means. For example, if they see a Palestinian with a ticking time bomb attached to dynamite, they know what to do. Okay, that's number one. But if you're not going to tell people what you mean by suspicious, what's the point of putting this out other than to provoke insane paranoia in the country? This is insane. What does she mean by a suspicious act? What does she mean by that? Mayonnaise is upside down in a jar? Hello, Homeland Security? There's a man with a military uniform with a cross on his chest who is buying a nutcracker. Please send an attack squad. What? Do you have any idea what this is going to do? Maybe they're looking for business. It could be that they have nothing to do. It's like fire departments around the country. Every once in a while, I have to send out if they get tired of the bacon and eggs in the ladder, there's not. Everything's so safe now. It's so buttoned down. How many firemen can there be? And I mean, I'm nothing against firemen. Who's going to pay all these pensions and these shiny trucks? It's the same thing with Homeland Security. What, we didn't have an FBI? We needed them? What for? The FBI existed. What did we need the Department of Homeland Security for? Now, I've met some agents who were such great guys. They deport gangbangers only to have them brought back in by the higher-ups in DHS. They kill themselves undercover. They get the illegals who are really bad guys. I mean, really bad, tough guys, and they get them. And then they find out they're released a month later because of pressure from lawyers. But they could be, this Department of Homeland Security could be wrapped up back into the FBI. What's the point of it? What does it do? It puts out PR messages like this? I'll take your calls on this and other subjects right here on the Savage Nation. Patricia in New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. So the way I see it, Big Sis has issued an order that every person who shops at Walmart should start profiling their neighbor. And I find it incredible that in such a place where people of middle and lower class income shop for cheap goods made from China and where nobody in Muslim garb shops, that we should all be profiling each other.
Well, what do you mean no one in Muslim garb? First of all, you can't say every Muslim is a terrorist. Let's be clear about that. I mean, let's be very clear. But on the other hand, what does she mean by suspicious?
It's schizophrenic. It's suspicious only to her.
Homeland Security starts with hometown security. What the hell does that mean? What the heck does that mean?
What it means is I actually do believe that this government believes there is a credible threat, and there's a reason why I'm saying that. So they don't have the couillons to come out and say, here's the information.
What do you mean? They really think there's something like a red light is back now again for Christmas? We've gone from yellow, green to yellow, now it's red again?
Yes, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, come on.
No.
Remember that clown in Homeland Security under Bush? The guy who went to Albania to take the job in security right after he left the government? That was really, every other day was red, green, yellow. Just before an election, everything turned red. After the Republicans got in again, became green. I don't know about a threat. I'm sending you a copy of How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? Stay tuned. 1-800-449-8255. What good is a Walmart employee going to do? You can go to some guy in the meat department and say you saw a woman with tenderizer wiping it on her eyelid. Or she bought a papaya and she's putting it on her cheeks. She looks like a whack job to you. What does she mean by suspicious? You know we could be comedic in the political arena and go down the list. A short video message will play at a select checkout location. Remind shoppers to contact local law enforcement to report suspicious activity. It's right out of Stalin's Russia or Hitler's Germany. I'm sorry. If you see something, say something, what do they mean? They have to be specific. This is a disastrous campaign that must be pulled immediately. It must be retooled, and a new message must be put out in Walmart if it must be in Walmart. Don't you think? Or how about putting it out in Arabic and playing it in mosques? If you see something, say something. Would that work for you? Or how about in the Somali community? Would that work for you? How about in the Somali communities where so many of their young men seem to get the message that America is horrible and they should go train somewhere in the Middle East to come back and kill you and blow up your Christmas trees? How about playing it in the Somali home language? If you see something, say something. What are you playing it in Walmart for? What sense does that make? Robert in New York, again on WOR, the only people calling are from New York. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, less marinara, more politics. That's what really sets you apart from the others, Michael.
Well, I know how to make a marinara sauce, or at least I know how to open a jar.
And you know how to tell a story, too. Your father taking up to the bungalow colonies and up Route 17 to the Catskills. Your readings from various books like Kerouac and
You see, not everybody misses the good stuff. Some of you love the Kerouac stuff. I remember that. That was really good. That was good, Robert. Well, I have the background. My children have grown up. If you're not a father, if you're not a parent, it's very hard for you to be a good talk show host. All you can talk about is golfing and how to put up wallboard. I'm sending you a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Stay on the line. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer.
Hi, I'm Janet Napolitano, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. Homeland security begins with hometown security. That's why I'm pleased that Walmart is helping to make our communities more safe and secure. If you see something suspicious in the parking lot or in the store, say something immediately. Report suspicious activity to your local police or sheriff. If you need help, ask a Walmart manager for assistance. Thank you for doing your part to help keep our hometowns safe.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history.
Now here's an interesting story that we should look at. A government like ours, which was once based on the land of the free and the home of the brave, under Obama and Sis Napolitano, is becoming the government of something else, not the land of the free and the home of the brave, but maybe the land of the freak and the home of the knave. They're in Walmart now, at TV monitors, at the checkouts in Walmart, with a new message from Big Sis, which is shocking. Department of Homeland Security announced the expansion of the department's national If You See Something, Say Something campaign to hundreds of Walmart stores across the country. And what they're trying to say is, if you see something, say something. It's part of some kind of campaign. And I guess it's to engage the public to report indicators of terrorism. What that might mean, I don't know. They're liable to get people calling because they couldn't find a certain Dorito or Dorito on a certain aisle. I have no idea. What do you mean, if you see something, say something? What do I mean by that? What's suspicious? Can they name it? Well, we couldn't name what suspicious means, unless it's a white male with blonde hair and blue eyes who looks like Timothy McVeigh. Well, as we open the show today, I mean, let's look at the weather. Britain is freezing to death. I know many of you leftists believe in global warming. Brr. But you may not know this. People are riding buses all day to stay warm in Britain. Many Britons cannot afford to heat their homes. Pensioners who are resorting to extraordinary measures to keep warm are now spending the day riding on buses to stay warm. Others are staying in libraries and shopping centers. This is what's going on as a result of global cooling, global warming. Well, we don't know what it is, but it's cold. The fact is the winter death toll is astronomical right now. And it says that England has the highest winter death rate in Northern Europe, worse than colder nations such as Finland and Sweden. Half of the people are forced to spend over 10% of their income on energy bills. And this is pretty amazing. So the fact of the matter is we have global cooling. I guess Al Gore got it just 180 degrees wrong, but what the heck, whoops. You know, last week, Lillian Jenkinson, age 80, and William Wilson, 84, were found dead in the gardens of their homes. Both are thought to have lain undetected in sub-zero temperatures for hours. A driver who stopped to help a stranded motorist in Yorkshire was killed when he was struck by another vehicle. So the cooling is pretty bad. Here's some of the audio we played today on the Savage Nation. We talked about the latest WikiLeaks on facilities that are vital to our national security. Well, here's a spokesmouth from WikiLeaks defending their national security insults.
It is scandalous that a government of a nation that pretends to keep in high ideal of freedom of speech should be in the forefront of this, pressuring companies to terminating the service to us as Amazon and PayPal. This attack on freedom of speech has been causing people to come to our offense, and now there are hundreds of sites mirroring the WikiLeaks site. So people obviously are not agreeing at all with this attempt to shut up WikiLeaks.
Can you believe this? Here is another talking head from this subversive group saying these leaks make Obama look good.
The easy access to this information is unfortunate, but the substance of this information is fine. Good, it's out there, and I think in many ways it shows that the Obama folks have been doing a pretty good job. There's nothing in here, you guys, about secret renditions, about secret prisons, about torture. It's a lot of Foreign Service guys basically doing in private what the Obama administration says they want to do in public.
And here's our president sadly tripping over a speech.
Too many people. He wrote in his dissent, To many people, the superfluous, it's this lip, it's it's hard to say. You try it when you've had 12 stitches.
It's too bad he can't blame the horrible economy on those speeches. And here is the disgraced newsman, Dan Rather, talking about Obama's political nightmare.
This is a political nightmare for Barack Obama as president. The more left portion of his party hates this, hates it with a passion. And politically, within his own party, if this goes through, Barack Obama will be in the position of he will have his shirt tail on fire, his back to the wall, and the bill collector at the door, which is metaphorically a way of saying he's almost guaranteed, if this goes through, to have a serious challenge in a Democratic primary for president in 2012.
Well, what about what happens to we the people if there is no challenge in 2012? Sarasota Mary, welcome to the show. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I was calling. I was very concerned about your dream. And
Let me ask you this before we go on. Are you at all an expert in dream analysis?
Well, I've had quite a lot of experience with dreams from God myself.
All right. Well, go on. Okay, then let's just take it as that. Go ahead, please. I met you in the street, told you I had a dream of two black wolves circling me. What does it mean?
Yeah, I would be very concerned for you, especially with what you're going through. The dream, I do believe, was from the Holy One of Israel himself, warning you and wants to protect you. Those two wolves are two very evil people who are encircling you and wish to devour you. You are their prey, and they want to get rid of you. I don't mean literally physically, but they want you. They want to get rid of you. They are.
Well, the two wolves are the United States government and the British government. Would that work?
That would work, and you can already see it forming. You know, you can see. You know what you were talking about earlier. That you know, those are two gigantic enemies that you've got that you're fighting against. And these people...
Well, what is the classic way to chase away a wolf?
Well, this is what you know, what you do. This, when the Lord gives you a dream like that, this is from God Almighty. You go to His Word. You pray to Him for His protection. This is what always I do. You go to Him, to His Word. You go and you pray Psalm 91, Michael, from the Old Testament. That is the greatest psalm of protection. The Israeli army prays that. The Israelites prayed that.
How does it go? Do you have it handy with you? I don't know that one.
It is the one that says, the angel of the Lord encamps about those who fear him. It is the one that that just talks about the angels encircling about you. It just gives you total protection from enemies. He hides you under the shadow of his wings. It's just such an amazing, powerful. You will feel his power.
That's very beautiful. I can hear it in your voice that you're a very spiritual woman.
I am. I love the Lord with all my heart and soul. He has protected me from such amazing things. I just can't tell you. And he warns me in dreams. And I see it. I see things happen, and I think, oh, my God.
I had thought, to get very pragmatic, that with the incoming administration in England, I didn't expect much of a change. But I thought that a thing so repugnant as this in a nation of free people would be immediately overturned.
I know. It's outrageous. And, again, all I can say, I just never call in radio shows, but I listen to you, and I just went crazy when I heard this dream. I thought, oh, my God, he's got to know this. He's got to know this.
Let me say this. Look, Mary, stay on the line. I'm going to send you a copy of the last remaining copies of Banned in Britain. I only have a number of them in inventory. They're only available on MichaelSavage.com, and I want you to have one of the rare copies because I'm not reprinting this book. I want to put it behind me, but apparently, you know, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in again. To use a bad joke, but I'll be right back.
Savage.
Bush's job approval rating is higher than Obama's. Post-recession unemployment is the worst since World War II. Even though Obama said there's going to be a pay freeze for federal workers, they're going to get raises equal to $2.5 billion. Our attorney general can't seem to find anyone who's of any danger to us, including the traitor behind WikiLeaks. Now we read that Assange is going to talk to the UK police, which is very interesting that he's not been banned from Britain, don't you think? Here's a man who releases the most sensitive data in English history, which could cause untold damage to millions of people, and he's not banned from England, but I am. Go figure. Just shows you what the Brits have become. Let's see. Dream Act, expected to die on the vine. Thank you. Another Time writer, has Obama's luck run out? I wonder. Ted Turner says Obama made a big mistake by pushing health care over climate, and he urges a one-child policy around the world to save the planet. Chairman Ted Turner. Frightening, isn't that? Isn't that frightening? That Ted Turner, does he have any children of his own? I wonder. Maybe he can sacrifice one of them. I mean, these people are crazy. Maybe they're insane. I don't know. Gold ends at a record high on Europe's woes and the dollar fears. It's getting worse by the second. What else do we see? Israel fears flood of migrants that are in the country is threatening the state of Israel. I guess they're also threatened by illegal aliens. No question about it. And these people are coming from Darfur, and they lived in Egypt for 5 years. They went across the Sinai Desert. Now they're smuggled into Israel. And one of them is a father of four who reached Israel in July, and he says, it was one of the happiest days of my life. So the Africans are now dancing with happiness in the land of milk and honey. They don't work, of course, but there's plenty of welfare because Israel's a welfare state, and it's a liberal state. And so, therefore, they get a nice, warm house. They get 3 meals a day for themselves and their children. 10% of the population of the Red Sea resort town of Eilat are African migrants. And an entire neighborhood in South Tel Aviv is known as Little Africa, where ethnic food shops and phone card stalls line the streets. The vast majority of these Africans hail from Eritrea, where men are often forced into a military service with slavery-like conditions. Really? And I thought Africa was so advanced, so much better than white man land, you know. Yet they're flooding into Israel now. How do you like that? I thought that the Jews were no good. Huh? Oh, God, it's getting awful. Initially, Israel took in many of the early arrivals. They gave them shelter. They arranged jobs in hotels. But there was no policy. So they sent letters home and said, hey, come on in, the matzah's fine. Haifa University geography professor says that if the current pace persists, there will be approximately 500,000 illegal migrants in Israel within 15 years. The whole nation is only a nation of 7.6 million people. So there it is. So the Africans are finding pockets of sympathy in Israel, where liberal human rights groups have urged the government to offer a home to Darfurians escaping genocide. Isn't that nice of them? Most of them don't live in Israel, by the way. Of course, if they smuggle themselves into Egypt, where the peaceful, loving Muslims live, it's a little different story. But that's the story. Liberalism is a mental disorder. It doesn't matter what the race or ethnicity is. Wherever this disease takes place, the body politic dies. I got a headache like you can't. I don't know why. I think I drank bad grapefruit juice today. It was in the refrigerator for 2 weeks. I didn't know grapefruit. It said the date mirrors anyway. I'm always in the hall of a high school, and I either have a shirt and I look down and I can't find my pants. and everyone's dressed, and I'm running looking for my pants. I don't understand it. It never actually happened to me. I know what it is. It's a feeling of inadequacy, or you're not prepared for school, whatever. Who knows the mind? Who knows the human mind, what lurks therein? You're lucky to get through a day without hurting yourself or others. That's all I can tell you. And that's why you need to believe in something, because otherwise we're wild beasts. We do anything. If we didn't actually believe in God and punishment, think about what you would be doing. Just think about how bad it would be. In other words, well, what good does it do with all of the horrors on earth? Think about how bad it would be if there was no belief in God at all. Just think of how much worse it could get. I once met a man who said to me, it doesn't really matter what the religion is. It all boils down to do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. And I said, yeah, that's a pretty good rule to live by. That's about right. Then another man said to me, basically, we do good even if we don't believe in God because we're good people. So that's a good one. That's a nice one. See, so people have worked it out in their own head in many different ways that you could be a decent person and not religious, or you could be the most religious person on earth and the worst SOB on the planet. All you got to do is take a look at some of our friends with the saws in their hand who chant to their God while cutting off someone's head who doesn't believe in their God, okay? They'll give you some idea of what could happen. So what does religion mean at the end of the day? What good is you do all the mumbo-jumbo and the rituals and you cut someone's head off or you put a bomb in a cafe? That makes you a better person? But I'm applying rational logic to this subject while they don't apply rationality nor logic to the subject of God. They're fanatics.
Savage.
I've been talking about our socialist president and how his incompetence is destroying this country. Well, here is further proof when we look at the New START Treaty, which I've talked about in Trickle Up Poverty in an entire chapter. This treaty will weaken our defenses. It will embolden our enemies. As I've pointed out for months now, joining us now is Baker Spring from the Heritage Foundation to talk about the flaws of this treaty. Baker Spring, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. Thank you for having me on today.
Well, what's your opinion of the single worst part of the START Treaty?
That it doesn't defend the American people, or for that matter, America's allies. It is a treaty that says that the United States will only have a nuclear arsenal for the purposes of retaliating against an attack on the American people, and that we just accept up front that we're going to lose those American people, and that the threat of retaliation will be sufficient to prevent the attack in the first place. I think in a proliferated world, that's a really damaging perspective to have. And I certainly hope that the United States Senate doesn't go down that road of purposeful vulnerability.
What are the other dangers in this START Treaty?
The treaty has a number of flaws, and we've identified 12 that are particularly important, and I'm not going to go through the process of mapping out all 12, but I will highlight the ones that I think that are at the very top of the list. The first comes back to that argument that I was talking about earlier, that the U.S. needs to get off this idea that, even a small or minimal nuclear deterrent will be enough to deter any adversary from attacking us. The United States has overwhelming military capabilities in the conventional as well as nuclear field, and it certainly didn't prevent North Korea from shelling a South Korean island just in recent days. So that what we really need is an overall strategic posture that really defends the American people and the people of America's allies around the world that could be subject to these kinds of threats and attacks. That is the most important thing by far. The second is that while this treaty permits the modernization of the nuclear force of the United States, which has been atrophying very badly because of congressional neglect over the last 10 to 20 years, It is not at all certain that the so-called nuclear modernization program that the administration has proposed will effectively remedy that atrophying process. So the United States has a nuclear capability that is on the descent, and while the Russians suffered in the aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union a significant reduction in their own, the Russians are on the cusp, in my judgment, of a resurgence in terms of their nuclear capabilities while the United States is still going down. The third option, or the third flaw, really, is that I believe that this treaty neglects the problem that is posed by the Russia's very, very large advantage in what we call non-strategic or tactical nuclear weapons. This treaty only limits strategic nuclear weapons, so that it leaves in place a very significant Russian advantage.
Mm-hmm.
The final thing is that the administration only views this as a first step, and this comes back to the question of nuclear disarmament, is that it has in mind a whole host of additional arms control steps that would go beyond this treaty that they think that they would have an open avenue to pursue if the Senate approves this treaty. Those include the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, an additional level of reductions in the U.S. nuclear force and an agreement with Russia, new approaches to non-proliferation that essentially weaken the U.S. security commitment to its friends and allies around the world. So, as I come to the end of this, there's two areas of flaws, generally speaking, in this treaty. Those that are within the treaty itself, for example, limitations on the missile defense options, which is what prevents the United States from adopting this more defensive posture to protect its people, but the stronger elements of what we need in terms of our overall military capability are also being compromised.
Is there any way to verify that Russia will cut back on the nuclear weapons? I don't think so.
Not to the degree that we should have for this particular agreement. You got to remember that verification provisions are really there in a particular treaty to verify the reductions that the treaty requires. So the different treaties require different verification standards and measures. Clearly, the ones that are in this treaty are weaker than what was in the old START treaty that expired roughly a year ago. I don't think that the verification of this particular treaty is adequate, and that's one of the problems that's within the treaty. I should say that we also have this other set of problems that exist in the relationship between the treaty and the Obama administration's broader policies. But I should say with regard to Reagan, he also had another central principle beyond trust but verify, which was, and of course this was back in the days of the Soviet Union, but the rule I think still applies, which is the United States always has to deal from a position of strength with authoritarian or totalitarian states. Now, I don't think Russia today is anywhere near like the totalitarian state that we had with the Soviet Union, but I think it does qualify as an authoritarian state, and the United States will have to deal with them from a position of strength, and I don't think the Obama administration believes that.
What do you think they should do?
What we call the Heritage Foundation a protect and defend strategy, putting in place a strategic posture, one that can be augmented by appropriately pursued arms control as opposed to this haphazard agreement that the Obama administration has negotiated, that really has as its central purpose to protect and defend the United States people and infrastructures and institution and territory against strategic attack, as opposed to relying on retaliation for an attack that's already killed maybe hundreds of thousands of Americans. I think what the American people want and should demand, and I think if the question was put for them directly, is that we want a defense policy that defends us. I'm not going to feel any better if I'm a radioactive ash heap because the United States has said it's going to retaliate for the attack that killed me. But that's basically what the administration has put at the foundations of this treaty in terms of what was guiding it, and overlaying it with this really contradictory notion that, well, we can still go to zero nuclear weapons. So on the one hand, they said, our security depends on nuclear retaliation because we're sort of skeptical about this idea of missile defense and other forms of defensive capabilities. At the same time, we want to go to zero nuclear weapons. So that what they've done is put a contradictory policy in place that is reflected in this treaty that is absolutely devastating, in my judgment, to the U.S. security posture.
Well, what's next?
I think that we are somewhere in the 50-50 range that they would take this up in lame duck session. And this comes back to the procedural issues. It would be unprecedented for the United States Senate to approve a major arms control treaty with the Soviet Union or now Russia in a lame duck session. Hasn't happened before. We've got 13 new Republican senators, only one who's been seated now because he was elected in a special election, who are effectively being deprived of a vote on this if it's voted on in lame duck session. Effectively, the American people have fired a bunch of senators, and the Senate leadership is saying the fired senators should be the ones that make the decision about whether the United States will be tied down to this treaty for a 10-year period. The third thing is that there are three newly seated senators who won't even have but a matter of days to look at a very complicated and potentially, you know, devastating from the viewpoint of U.S. security treaty. And so I think that is inappropriate. So that the question of a lame duck session seems outlandish to me. But nonetheless, here we are with the administration, and particularly the president himself, pressing for this very hard. I think it's in a 50-50 time frame. As it relates to the next Congress, if it's put into the next Congress, I think that we're back to essentially a clean slate. The treaty would go back to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which reported it earlier this year, and they'd have to go through another hearings process. And of course, we'd have the new senators that have just been hired by the American people weighing in. I think it's a little difficult at this point to say what would happen in that new environment. Some of it would depend on what the new senators decide that they want to do.
Well, does Obama view this as his best last chance to get this to pass?
He may view it that way. I think that that's an inappropriate way to view it, both from the viewpoint of the substance of the treaty as well as from the procedural considerations that I've just outlined for you.
The president of Russia, Dmitry Medvedev, said that we can go back into a nuclear arms race if an agreement is not made on the START treaty. Well, how do you think his comments affect how this is viewed within the Senate, within Washington? Are they going to cave to his pressure?
Oh, I think that on the part of the proponents of this treaty, that they will use it as essentially a scare tactic to try and bludgeon the Senate into considering and ultimately opposing this treaty. I think they would have made that argument at any time. Regarding the skeptics of the treaty, I think quite appropriately they're going to say, look, Russia is intent on generating a new arms race if we give them the opportunity to do so at any time, and that actually this treaty will facilitate the arms race that the Russians are intent on pursuing, but they'll have a more difficult time of achieving the kind of political gains that they would get from it if the treaty is not approved.
If this treaty is approved by the Senate, how would it fit into Russia's strategic international policy goals?
They would essentially see this as the United States granting Russia a pause in its own strategic posture, both with regard to defensive capabilities and particularly missile defense capabilities, and regarding its offensive nuclear force, to allow the Russians to either at a minimum retain parity with the United States or, if given the opportunity, to achieve outright nuclear superiority. You got to remember that because the Russians already have this enormous advantage in non-strategic nuclear weapons that are not limited by this treaty, that if they have parity with the United States and strategic nuclear weapons, then they have an immediate circumstance of general nuclear superiority.
Well, thank you, Baker Spring, for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for having me on the Savage Nation. It was a great opportunity for me to discuss these issues regarding New START.
More bad policies from one of the worst U.S. presidents in history. All of this is covered. The whole story of the dangers of the START Treaty are found in one source, Trickle Up Poverty. Buy it for Christmas. Get informed. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I want to talk about nutrition, because it's a field I know a lot about. So if you have a nutrition question for one segment, perhaps, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I mean, this distinguishes me from anybody else in talk radio, in fact, in the history of talk radio. I'm going to read for you now a list of books by Michael Savage, 1972, Earth Medicine, Earth Food, about American Indian foods and medicines. 1972, mind you. I think it is still in print. I'm not sure. I know it was reprinted in 1980. 1975, Plant a Tree. 1976, I wrote a children's book called Bugs in the Peanut Butter, published by Little Brown, for the kiddies to see what toxins were in their foods even then. Remember, 1976, when most of the fakers in the conservative talk business were either still pinko liberal pot smokers in law school or whatever. Then came Man's Use for Plants, 1976, which, by the way, won an award for outstanding science books for children in 1976, believe it or not. It's true. Then I got interested in beer, and I started brewing beer and traveling to breweries. I wrote The Taster's Guide to Beer, Macmillan, 1977. Then came the heavy-duty nutrition stuff, 1981, The Way of the Skeptical Nutritionist, Macmillan, 1981. It's actually a very, very good book. There's still some good info in it. In 82, I did The Art of Feeding Children Well, which I've republished as Healing Children Naturally, which is still available on michaelsavage.com. It's a great book. I'd like to save the world from the pain children are put through by the quacks who push drugs on them by reading that book. Nutrition Against Aging, Bantam published in 83. Secrets of Fijian Medicine, 1983. It's a very important book, little known, not important for you, because it's about the plants of the Fijian Islands that were used by folk healers who I lived with and how they used them in medicine. It was published by a division. It was the first book that the UN ever paid for. Would you believe it to be published? Yes, the UN. And the Fijian government got a grant from the UN to publish the book. It's a wonderful book. It's a great legacy of mine. I'm very proud of it. Getting Off Cocaine was published in 1984. I pioneered nutritional treatment for people hung up on cocaine. It was a very important book. At the time, it's been completely forgotten. 1986, big blast of a book, Maximum Immunity, and Houghton Mifflin published it. It's in six languages and still has some very useful information. It gives you a great – you can't buy any of these books, so I'm not selling them to you. What did I do? Maximum Immunity, Houghton Mifflin, 1986. Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's, 1987, a very important book, 20 years ahead of its time. I was talking about the use of antioxidants in the prevention of the development of Alzheimer's. I also talked at length about neurotoxic metals such as aluminum. Don't underestimate the importance of that information. 1989, The Complete Book of Homeopathy. 1992, The Herbal Bible. Herbs That Heal, 1994. The Antioxidant Cookbook, 1995. The Death of the White Male, 1991. Well, that's more political. Now we get into the political books. The Savage Nation, 2002, and here come the bestsellers. Let's see. The Enemy Within, 2003. Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, 2005. The Political Zoo, 2006. Psychological Nudity, 2008. Banned in Britain, 2009. And, of course, my blockbuster, Trickle Up Poverty, which is likely going to be my last book in the whole sequence of nonfiction. It may be my last nonfiction book. I match this to anybody in the history of talk radio. Nobody can match it. No matter what you may hear people saying about me, there's something that they can't take away from me, and they never can. And that's this track record I've just given you. Obama addressed the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute. He incorporated part of the Declaration of Independence, but he removed any reference to the Creator. It's a very important story. It goes to the heart of what's wrong with President Obama with regard to the American people. It's not that everyone's so, you know, fanatically religious, but they understand this man is a naked Marxist. He's an atheist. By every measure, the man is everything you fear about him. Is he the, you know, the exact Frankenstein that you make him? No. He may be worse than Frankenstein in the sense that Frankenstein was a fictional character. And Obama is very real, thank you. And Obama is so out of touch with the history of America and what we want as a future for America, that in some ways he's worse than Frankenstein, incidentally. By the way, incidentally, I know you don't want to hear it, but that's how I see it. And I want to go into another thing. Everyone says the economy is the number one issue, and I don't doubt it, because if you don't have a job, all the rest of it doesn't amount to very much. But when I say in my subtitle, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders, Economy, and Security, I mean very much that I think that immigration is a bigger story, because it's the underlying reason for so many of our economic problems. When you have tens of millions of individuals who are A, not paying taxes, and B, stealing the poorest jobs in the country, what you're doing is pulling down the entire economy, and you're making poverty trickle up. That's number one. Number two, why do I say borders, economy, and security? Well, I explained borders. You know what the economy means, it's self-evident. The man has undermined our national security on every level. I've told you that. How can you overlook what this president has done? How can you overlook that the man is assaulting our military. He is assaulting NASA. He is trying to undermine our nuclear capacity. Do you understand any of this? I saved every one of these speeches, every one of these policies. It didn't just come and go like a news story to me. To me, it's a passion to try to get it through to you. So what I'm saying is it's not just about the economy. It's also about our security. It's also about our self-respect, incidentally. President Obama has diminished our self-respect as a nation, in case you don't know it. I don't think that's something you can pose as a question for as a pollster. I don't think you can ask people, do you think President Obama has diminished our image in the world? I don't think that would even compute statistically, but I'll tell you on an instinctual level, President Obama has diminished our image worldwide. I dream of a leader that one day I'll wake up to a leader that I'm proud of, who will actually get up and stand up and represent this country in a masculine way and project machismo on the world. How do you like that? Does that offend you? I want a masculine leader along the lines of Putin without the totalitarian instincts of Putin. I'd like to see a macho leader of the United States of America to bring us back from the abyss of insignificance that we have inherited over the last three or four presidencies. And I don't think anybody has defined it in that manner exactly.
Savage.